Hello everyone, Rob here in the Bunker Studio. The program for this week is as follows. First, we're going to have a conversation with a new investigative reporter at the Delaware Call, Lisa Power, just to introduce her to everyone and to talk about her debut story that came out earlier this week about some systems loopholes at the Delaware DMV that could potentially be exploited by the ICE Gestapo. After which, we will release the bonus portion, patrons only, for our Senator Eric Buxton discussion. Senator Buxton was kind enough to record quite a bit of bonus content for you real ones out there, and I think you will enjoy it. To be perfectly honest, I think this bonus material really is necessary to understand the full Buxton piece. I don't think you can even criticize the Buxton piece without listening to the full patrons-only material. And believe me, people have been criticizing it. We hear you. You know, that's what they say. We hear you. We're holding space for you. We appreciate the people who appreciated it. We appreciate the people who refused to listen to it. We appreciate the people who hated it. We appreciate the people who, you know, we're mad for different reasons. All I can say is that for a long time, people have sort of been begging me to, host a Republican, basically. I mean, to make it simple enough. And I'm into hosting more. I do appreciate all of the feedback. I hope you will consider going ahead and sending us a little monthly fee. I think we've deserved it at this point. And I think you will appreciate it. This is sort of like going to be like the Steve Wood episode. If you remembered Steve Wood, defense attorney extraordinaire, former attorney general, deputy attorney general. We did a long sort of peace with him, again, another Republican, but not an elected official. And, and if you pay, you can go back and listen to that. If you pay, you can go back and listen to Medina and I a few weeks ago talking about the real estate value reassessment situation. So there's more and more bonus material happening every day. So, anyway, enjoy the show, and we will be back to you next week, right around the holiday time, which is a perfect time for, you guys know it, you guys love it, film episode. So we'll be doing cinematic adventures. I think we've already kind of talked about it. It's going to be one battle after another, the new Paul Thomas Anderson film, ensemble, beautiful ensemble cast. And also we'll be talking about the source material, the novel, the 1990 novel, Vineland by Thomas Pynchon. Until then, enjoy this week's episode. Left is best. All right, we're back. Hello, Lisa. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Everyone, I want to introduce a new investigative reporter who will be doing a lot of work for the Delaware Call, Lisa Power, and talk about her debut story that came out earlier this week about a loophole in a police database that allows ICE to access motor vehicle information in Delaware, which I actually did not know about this. So it was quite interesting. So, Lisa, how are you? And can you provide a little background? We just met a couple of weeks ago through Zamara Moore, who was also working for the call. And you guys have a little bit of a history, too. It's very interesting. So, yeah, why don't you let everybody know sort of a little bit about your background?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. And I'm happy to be here. I have been doing journalism since I was in my undergrad when I worked for my student newspaper, and I was the arts and culture editor. And from that, after graduation, I went to work at a very hyper-local digital publication in Toronto, where I'm from. And then the pandemic kind of hit, and I took a step back to just kind of regroup and figure out what I wanted to do before heading off to Columbia in New York City, which is where I met Ziomara, or Z. And we became friends right away and reported on our respective master's degrees together in the same neighborhood in Brooklyn throughout the duration of our program. And we've kept in touch since. And I am so grateful to have been included in some of her questions about stories from when she sort of joined the Delaware call a few months ago for the launch of the police misconduct oversight group with the Delaware call. And so when it time came, and you know, by recently she had been getting a lot of tips, and she asked me to come on and help her with her workload, and I'm happy to assist in any way I can. So here I am, and I'm excited to examine police misconduct allegations and instances and the legalities and the experiences of people, particularly in Delaware, but particularly in Dover. So I, full disclosure, have traveled through Delaware. While we were in our program, I took a lengthy 10-day Amtrak trip during our March break from New York to Seattle. And it was all the way across the U.S., all the way through the South and up through California, along the West Coast. So I did pass through Delaware, and we stopped in Wilmington. And that is, so I physically have been there. And one day I would like to come and check it out and meet everyone and talk to people and find out what the issues, any issues they have that are of concern.
Yeah, it was interesting when we started talking, to find out you're based in Toronto, but when we were chatting last week, you have already been supporting Z in her work, so you knew a lot of the specifics about like the Dover stuff. And I was like, here's a reporter in Toronto who is breaking down like the Dover City Council. So it was pretty interesting to have that conversation, I have to say. I wonder, and you know, this happens everywhere, but Delaware, and I'm sure Z has mentioned, is a fairly weird place because of its size, because of its sort of politics and history, and I assume that you will get when you're making calls or emails or working on stuff, you will get the sense that people are even more suspicious of people who are not from here. I mean, obviously, you know, calling as a reporter, people are always kind of on edge. But I wonder, have you had that experience yet, or are you just looking forward to your first one?
Actually, immediately after I finished my first story, my first thought was, I'm so glad I kept my New York City number. Like, I'm in, and I've been like, I'm with my U.S. provider, and I have to pay the exchange rate to like keep my cell service going and like keep that New York number. And I'm so glad, at least, even though I'm remote and situated in Toronto, at least like The New York number has some authority. This is real. I'm a real person. I went to Columbia. Like lived in the United States. Like I have a sense of it. And Z has definitely filled me in on some of the quirks and features of Delaware for sure, especially its legal system, which I'm sure we're going to talk about when it comes to, police rights and FOIAs and all that nitty-gritty weird stuff that journalists come up against in our reporting.
Yeah, and I don't know if we've talked about it. You may be aware. I know Z is aware. The call and myself individually still have an open lawsuit against the state for police records. But they're really general records. We worked a few years ago to kind of figure out, what general records could we request that we probably wouldn't get but should. And now that case has really strung out for, quite a while. And when you think about that, I think we asked for literally just demographic information, like how many police are on the state police, what's their background, like what, the stuff like that. And even getting that stuff was extremely difficult, and it's still, it's still a pending case. So yeah, I think part of the story here isn't just what's going on, but the institutional rules that allow it to continue. Because nobody really wants to scrutinize it, I think, the way it should be scrutinized. But it should be interesting. And I didn't know that you had a New York number, because I do think about that stuff. I know when obviously I deal with reporters and journalists from different local outlets all the time. And when I'm talking to new journalists that are maybe new to one of the independent outlets or the nonprofit outlets, and I see their number is even an out-of-state area code, I think, oh, somebody's going to have a big problem with this. All the weirdos here will freak out about it. But I will say, and maybe you can, maybe you have a thought about this. In my opinion, all of that stuff, all of that sort of internecine, all of the, it's very bad, actually. And the people who are best situated to unpack it are people that are unencumbered by all of our little quirks and gossip, and this person knows this person. I went to high school with their mom. They own the shop down the street, and they know everything about me and all of that stuff, because of our size. And I think that people coming in that aren't weighed down by that are actually better situated to do this kind of work. That's my opinion.
I think you can argue that. I mean, like an example that comes to mind is like the spotlight kind of lore about Marty Baron coming from a different place and unpacking the whole Catholic Church institution and nobody wanted to touch that because that was a sensitive issue in Boston, but he was an outsider, so he felt like less emotionally d attached to that institution. And I think I was, I was thinking about that. I do find it like, I do think there is something to be said about me being there. And like I said, like going into the grocery store and talking to the person and saying, what matters to you? I don't have that ability right now. I have to sort of look at things on a macro scale, from where I am in a different country. I don't know if that puts me at a disadvantage in some way, to not have the ability to have those in-person conversations at this time. In terms of having a sort of outsider perspective, I mean, of course, as a Canadian, we're feeling all sorts of ways about the US at large right now, with all the geopolitical aspects of our relationship between the two nations changing. And then having lived in New York and having lived in the US and seen so much of it and sort of got a grasp for the culture and being American educated as well, I feel like a hybrid of all of these components put together. I think it would depend on what I'm trying to achieve. For example, I obviously am having some trepidation when it comes to traveling to the US right now. But if I was to be detained, it would be like the best thing for me as a journalist to have that. That's like a golden opportunity for a story, right? Like that would be the best thing ever.
I don't
You
know if we talked about this, but I completely agree with that sentiment. I think we might have even talked about it. I joke with the producer here, Carl, all the time about, like, yeah, one of the best things that could happen to this show is for us to be sued for something, because it would just you're giving us the publicity and you're demonstrating the thing that we were trying to demonstrate through investigative reporting. You're going to just do it to me. And now I can demonstrate where you're coming from. I think a lot of it takes a special sort of mindset to sort of think like that. Sort of a, you know, it takes a little bit of bravery and a little bit of savvy too, to know that, you know, whatever happens, whether it's a lawsuit or you're being detained at the airport or whatever it is, that you know you're going to get out of it in some fashion. And you're going to be able to then kind of turn the tables because of the situation you're in. You're going to be able to report on this, you know. So yeah, and I did think about it too when you published your first story about ICE accessing records. I'm like, it's right there in the headline. I'm like, yeah, you're on the list. We're all on the list. I love it.
That's it. And I think like in terms of the insider outsider perspective, one can easily become an insider is what I'm trying to say. For example, for me, I know I want to settle in the US, and right now with the visa stuff, I mean the H-1 visa getting jacked up to $100,000 for a fee that like totally cuts off a lot of opportunities for me for like full-time sponsored work. So that's been an impediment. But that being said, like as I report on ICE for the Delaware call, I am also simultaneously going through the immigration process to the United States. Inevitably, I will be an expert on immigration. Like, this matters to me. So, while it may be happening in Delaware, I still care about the nature of these ICE stories, and they actually affect me. So when it comes to like me being an outsider, I would say like I am actually gravitating towards like an ex like an actual lived expertise on US immigration. Like by the time that I get my like dual citizenship in 10, 15 years, like I will have gone through that process. So to report on ICE, yeah, I'm on the list. Like let's go. Of course, of course. Like, for sure. Glad to be there. It's an honor.
Yeah, I agree. So this particular story about this, and I guess I sh one of the things that I'm sort of known for is covering this, but not knowing all of the details. I'm quite known for that. So I do see that you know, some bills were introduced and moved a little bit during the last session. But yeah, how did you get on this story? I know there was a letter sent very recently to sort of bring the issue back up because it wasn't the, you know, the bill that did get processed this term actually had a loophole in it. And then the action that would address that is sort of languishing in the legislature. Yeah, what angle were you working and how did you get onto this one?
So, as we saw, Democratic Congress, a contingent of Democratic Congress people sent letters to Democratic-leaning state governors or Democratic governors, just alerting them, just saying, hey, there's a loophole in this data sharing system that enables state police to sort of work as a third party to allow ICE to access DMV data. And I mean, you can see that the Delaware legislature has made it very clear that they do want to protect undocumented people. They've been very clear about that over the years, that they're not going to be sort of like so like so involved with like readily share data with ICE in an effort to protect its their citizens, the citizens of that state, or the undocumented individuals, and speaking to advocates regarding the sort of setup of the driving system there, you can see that Margaret Reyes had said, we put in this provision for drivers, we fought to put in this provision for drivers' privileges for undocumented people. And so, of course, if you're gonna dig into the DMV data, they're not gonna wanna engage with the DMV. Like, that's a problem. This is sensitive information, and of course, we've seen that this particular administration is really okay with data mining, is has a really data mining mindset of really unearthing lots of personal data from the DOGE committee and from Medicaid and Medicare. There's really no regard for privacy. And my takeaway from this story and sort of what I wanted to illustrate was that this isn't actually new. This obviously the initial bill from 2015 that sort of scaled back cooperation with ICE was negated when they were like, oh, well, criminal, immigration related offenses are criminal. So you do have to cooperate with us regardless. And so that proved kind of futile. And then fast forward to now in the second term, it's again, it's like we're trying to sort of protect data and to keep our state data and our driver's data private and secure. And it's just, again, it's just not, it just kind of fell apart. The effort kind of fell apart. And it's almost like no matter, it's almost like a battle of briefcases and like a crossing of gavels. This is such a lawyer's legalese, dense, esoteric matter. It seems so simple, but then it's all so convoluted. And it's like pursuant to section XYZ, the state police are following the rules, and this provision was in there and now it was taken out. And upon doing some digging into sort of like the ICE legal infrastructure, it is overseen by the Department of Homeland Security, who employs 17 to 2,000 lawyers. And those immigration lawyers are the same as immigration lawyers that work to advocate for individuals who are facing deportation. And in the true spirit of legal interpretation that is never ending and comes from all angles and is prismatic in its complexity, those DHS lawyers could say, we are doing something good for our country. We're getting illegal people out of it, people who have broken the law. And then you have advocates saying, we're doing good things for our country and sort of saying, we're protecting the democratic process. And it's so hard to understand how progress stalls and it's just hardly ever made. And it's like one step forward, two steps back, and how ICE and more specifically the DHS lawyers can easily outfox the Delaware legislative lawyers. Whoever's the better lawyer, whoever combing through these laws line by line, whoever has the better and stronger interpretation wins out in the end. And ultimately, I would say, like, if I ever needed legal representation, I would hope that my lawyer is as, particular and attentive to details and can comb through laws and find loopholes and find ways to get me out of a sticky situation too. So that was my takeaway from writing this story is, this is really such a difficult legal question to understand. Ultimately, immigration in the US is a legal matter, period.
Yeah, and the as far as Delaware is concerned, the the trick always is that, for example, the governor of Delaware is a Democrat, a liberal Democrat, we'll say, but a corporate Democrat still, and also someone who is operating in Delaware. And the police in general, especially the state police, are a very powerful interest in Delaware, a very powerful, what they would call, stakeholder. In many cases, especially in the kind of work that I do, in police reform, just looking for transparency, more public accountability, so we can understand how that process works, just in Delaware, there's a huge, huge pushback against it, because the state police especially are the gatekeepers of a lot of the data and a lot of the way stuff works here in Delaware. When I read your story the first time, and I saw that the system itself that is in the Department of Motor Vehicles is administered by the Delaware State Police. And I, while I didn't know that particular one, I do know that all of these things are, the state police has a huge level of control on this kind of stuff in Delaware. And so it's you have a Democratic legislature, you have a Democratic governor, they're getting this information from, the people who are tracking this, so they know that it's happening. But even then, the actually being able to address this stuff it becomes incredibly complicated. Frankly, I mean, not to find the one problem, it's many problems, but there's a huge deference to the state police here in Delaware, because they've grabbed control of a lot of these processes and a lot of these systems. And from a political standpoint, people are not really interested, especially at that level of government, in going head to head with the police.
Absolutely. These are powerful institutions. And, they're as complicated as they are old, in that however long it took them to form is however long it's going to take to reform. Really, there's going to be opposition. And of course, it's really about the values of the communities and the voters and the state at large, and what everyone agrees on is a principled approach to policing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, that's on the other side of my work. That's exactly what it is. It's making sure that the community voice can be heard and can be translated into something actionable, because that's really the only way that any of this stuff sort of gets sorted out. Because luckily we still are able in Delaware, maybe not everywhere in the United States, as you said, but we still are able to enforce sort of democratic, by democratic means, by voting people out, we'll be able to enforce our will. But we have to hold, once we do that, we even have to hold then the elected legislators accountable for doing this stuff, which again gets even more hairy. So, I was just excited that you were so enthusiastic about coming, helping out Z, and jumping in on this work. So I have to thank you for that, because it's we've been scraping by doing the best we can, and any professional help is very much appreciated, I have to say.
Of course. I'm so happy to help. I'm so happy to be part of the team. I'm so happy to assist in any way I can to highlight issues that matter to people from a distance. I do what I can.
Yeah, yeah. And this is how we put everybody on notice. We're watching. We're always watching you. We're always seeing what you're doing. We're even getting people from other countries to watch you, just putting everybody on notice. That's what I like to do. So, Lisa, thank you for joining us. Thanks for your story. We're very excited to have you working with The Call, working with Z. And, thanks for taking the time to do this, too.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it.
You are very welcome. And for everybody who is a patron of this podcast, which you should be after all of this time. There's a lot of you we see, you know, you've been a non-paid subscriber. You can do that for a year. You can give it a year. We'll give you 1 year. Otherwise, you got to kick up. This is one of the reasons you're going to want to. Senator Buxton was kind enough to stay and record some bonus material, some patrons-only material. And so if you are a patron, we're going to run with that now. If you're not, you'll just miss it. You know, I'm going to tell Lisa what was said, but you're not going to know. So there. Now, enjoy the patrons-only episode if you're a patron. And remember, left is best.